It's about bloody time that we're back. It's the Football Sack Podcast. It is the Friday show. I am in my usual seat in the Southern Cross University radio recording studios, and my name is Jack Quigley, and joining me to co-host the podcast, as he always does, but not here in the room with me, he is, of course, down in Melbourne, is our good friend Christian Leyland.
How are we, everyone?
How are you, mate?
Oh, I'm quite well, thank you, yourself.
I'm very good, too. I'm glad to hear that you're well. It's been a while.
It has been quite a while. It's been too long, in fact.
Is Victorian football keeping you busy?
Of course. We've got the Melbourne Victory W League and Victorian Champions League action, so I've been busy pretty much every single day of the last month. But it's all good. You work in football, you love it.
That's right. And, you know, and that's backing up on, like, what was it, like 3 years of just totally nothing that you did up here. Let's talk A-League action. We've got plenty on the plate, and we have a lot of bad jokes to catch up on, such as the absence being in between Friday shows, and I apologise for disappearing off the face of the earth for a while. Apparently, if you don't go into work, they don't pay you, so I've had to start actually going in and doing that. But as soon as I overcome some sort of system where I can place a dummy in at work and they'll pay me, you'll get a regular Friday show, hopefully starting from now on. Let's talk results from last week. We'll start at the weekend before we get to the midweek game that happened just recently. We'll go Friday night, and it was the end of the record streak, and I don't think anyone saw this coming. The Heart went to Suncorp Stadium, and I think if you had bet on Melbourne Heart to win and a Santa hat to come out of someone's pants during that game, geez, you'd be a rich man right now, wouldn't you?
Absolutely. I'd just like to put on the record, of course, that wasn't the end of the record streak, because it happened the week before.
Ah, of course, yes, that's right, yeah.
Yeah, my mistake. No, the Santa hat out of the pants is an absolutely classic celebration, and what he got booked for, but in my mind, totally worth it.
Yeah, well, how many games had he been playing with the Santa hat down his pants hoping to score is what I want to know.
Well, that's true. You'd think it'd be quite a coincidence if he managed to keep it down his pants and bring it out to do that. It was the only match in like 10 weeks that he's actually scored. So he must have been keeping it down for a while. And what I really want to know is, when it comes to Easter time, what is he going to put down his pants then?
That's very... I want Germano to just now, for every holiday, whatever the reason... You know, whatever the religion, just any holiday. Queen's birthday, I want him to pull out like a crown and wear that.
Or maybe for Hanukkah, he can pull out one of those Jewish tumbler things, because I'm sure that won't be awkward in his pants.
Yeah, or one of those candlestick holder things with like six prongs on it, whatever they have.
Absolutely.
I'm sure that, you know, because the referees these days, they check the ring, they check the necklace, they move on. They don't check the groin.
Well, actually, I beg to differ, because, of course, a few months ago we had that player down in Melbourne who got red carded for having his penis pierced.
That is true. Although, in my defence, the referee didn't check that. It was well and truly part of the game before the referee was made aware of it.
That's true. It's a bit of an unusual situation, because he literally pulled down his pants to check it that it was still there during the middle of the game. So I guess he brought it along among himself, didn't he?
Yes, that's right. Now that's a bookable offence. not a Santa hat. We should actually talk a little bit about the game, I guess. Brisbane just looked flat. Do you think it was just on the back of the bubble bursting the week before? We saw with Arsenal, when their 49 game run ended in the English Premier League, they went on a bit of a streak where they kind of felt lost for a little bit afterwards. Do you think that was the case again for Brisbane?
Possibly. I think a big part of it is, and we saw against the Phoenix as well, and especially so against Sydney, where like a lot of teams are taking the Mariners' lead, and they actually know how to play Brisbane now.
I think there's also a case that there's a certain player missing for the Raw who's not half bad when he's on the pitch for them. So,
of course, because James Meyer wasn't playing.
That's right, and when James Meyer's not there, you miss him, and you wonder where Thomas Broich is also. Look, it's a big difference, and you know, one of our contributors, Neil Sherwin, sort of joked that on Twitter that Brisbane, not content with having the greatest winning streak in Australian sporting history, they're now going to go for the losing streak.
Very nice. Well, yeah, good luck to them. But you see, it's similar to the Arsenal situation where, you know, they played good football, and as soon as teams, and you know, even though teams worked them out and tried to sit back, they had the X factor in Thierry Henry, who could break through any defence no matter how stringent. But as soon as Thierry Henry left, so did the trophies. And Brisbane, without Broich, that's their Henry. Without him, they don't have that X factor to get through the 10 players sitting in the box. And I'm quite certain, I mean, Messi plays that role for Barcelona, and before Messi, there was Ronaldinho. And before Ronaldinho, they played good football but didn't have the X factor and they didn't win any trophies. It's because teams know how to defend against that side. You need that one special player who can break through when nothing else is going right. And as it shows here, Broich is a crucial part of that side, and I'm sure when he's back in the team, they'll get back to winning ways. But when he's not, they're going to have to try to come up with something different to get past the buses.
Are you saying then that Brisbane minus Thomas Broich, you know, would they be a finals team?
Oh, they'd absolutely be a finals team. I mean, playing that sort of football, you're going, even without a Broich, you're going to win more games than you're going to lose. What they might need to do a bit more, though, is rather than pass it around the opposition's box in the final third, is sit back into the middle third, try to draw the opposition out so they can hit the space behind the defence. They did attempt that against Wellington, but they were very, very disciplined, the Phoenix defence, and they just would not move. And so they actually, in a strange situation, they forced Brisbane to attack the final third when Brisbane didn't want to. They're going to have to come up with a way, when they don't have Broich and they don't have Henrique, to be able to combat that. And yeah, that's Ange Postecoglou's challenge for when those players aren't there.
We sort of saw that in their match against Melbourne Victory, the 2-2, when Melbourne Victory went down to 9 men. It almost suited Melbourne Victory better than it did Brisbane. Brisbane would have much preferred Melbourne have 11 players and actually want to come at Brisbane, and that might open up a bit of space, because when they had 9 and said, right, well, we're going to sit back, try and break us down, Brisbane's job was made a hell of a lot harder.
Well, exactly. That second, I was at the match with a few other colleagues, and when the second red card was handed out, I said to them straight up, I said, that red card is more beneficial to Melbourne than it is Brisbane, because it suddenly gives them an excuse for every single player to sit in the box. And when you have 9 players sitting in the box, you can't pass through them, and there's not even enough space to shoot from outside the box. You just have to, you know.
You're waiting for a mistake, aren't you? Yeah.
It's a hard situation for the Raw in the fact that everybody has worked them out. Because previously, last season, a lot of teams did try to sit back, and as soon as they got the ball, they did kind of boom it long and hope to get on the counter. But teams are a bit smarter now. They've got Graham Arnold came up with a strategy. It took him 3 games in the whole season to do it, but it was quite effective. Is they sit back when they win the ball, they just keep it, and they don't even try to attack. And that way, because Brisbane won't score, because all other teams are giving the ball back, and Brisbane just attack again, and they'd wear the opposition out. But teams are a lot smarter. They're playing now how they should have been playing 8 months ago, and it's going to take Brisbane some time to adjust.
Indeed. Credit, though, must go to the Heart, we should mention as well. They've done well. It's not just Brisbane's implosion. Sydney FC deserved their win, Heart deserved theirs, and Wellington deserved theirs. We'll get to that in a second. Other games from last weekend, of course. Wellington 1, Perth 0. Not one that they'll be sending many DVDs out of.
No, not at all. It was probably one of the most boring games this season, if not the last few seasons. But a Wellington versus Perth match is probably going to be expected. But
the default derby just keeps failing to live up to expectations, doesn't it?
That's right. It's it's a strange one. I do love the default derby, just the name itself, and yeah, I'm sure the Perth and Wellington supporters are keen for that match every week.
Oh, they hate each other. Hate each other. And if they ever go on holiday and see one of, oh dear, oh dear.
It's quite funny because I saw I think it might have been the FFA Twitter, official Twitter, kind of, they were trying to say something like a bit tongue-in-cheek and saying, surely you guys are the biggest rivals in the league. And someone came in and said, yeah, they said, oh, I really hate the Phoenix. You know, I got served by a girl with a Kiwi accent at Coles the other day, so naturally I just punched her in the face. And FFA came back and said, oh, well, actually, we don't condone that. And then so the other guy came and said, so you don't condone it, so you don't actually condone the rivalry, so originally you were lying to us, and FFA said, yep, no comment. So.
Yeah, no, that's, I want more A-League related, vaguely A-League related violence in the streets. That's what I want.
Absolutely. I mean, there's nothing healthier than a sport than fans, you know, burning up cars, turning them upside down and ripping off the non-existent fire hydrants off the street.
There wasn't another.
When you have on-street violence. I mean, look at every USA sport in the world.
Exactly. I'm just going to go back to the old line. It shows they care, you know?
Yeah.
Exactly. Moving on. Victory 1, Adelaide 1. Melbourne Victory still can't win.
No, they can't. And let's be honest, they really should have had this game. They had the one-goal advantage. Adelaide had nothing to offer. Yes, it was a good finish. Yes, it was a little bit lucky. And yes, Victory were the better side. But if you're not putting the points on the board, no matter how good the performances are, the fans are going to get peeved off.
That's right.
And that's what they're doing. You know, they undeservedly or deservedly so, they are frustrated with Mehmet Durakovic, and there is pressure on him. As much as the board says there isn't, yeah, you can't shy away from that fact.
Are you a Mem fan?
Look, I made this mistake with Ange Postecoglou when his first season with Brisbane Roar. I said he's playing rubbish football with us. He's tactically naive and he's going nowhere. I was proved wrong. So from that moment on, I always said I'll give a coach one full season to implement what he wants to. If he comes in halfway through the season, he gets it half and then another full season before I say he should stay or should he go. So for me, I'm saying he should get a full season. I am in support of what he's doing. You know, with the Melbourne Victory Youth Team, he had them playing some good football. And you have to remember, with the Victory Youth Team, they're 15 and 16-year-olds playing in under 23 competition. So they're not out to win. They're there for development. And to get that team playing the way he did, you know, if given time with the Melbourne Victory senior squad, he will do well, I feel. But again, I will give them a full year. But with the board and with the fans, that's another question altogether.
That's right. I think Mem might want to listen to this podcast because it's about the only nice thing being said about him at the moment. So if you are tuning in, Mem, stay strong, mate. Stay strong. Central Coast Mariners that we just alluded to just before. Graham Arnold, who continues to grow as a coach. He's becoming quite tactically astute now. His side got through the Bogan Derby 2-0. They'll take that and move on, won't they?
Yeah, they will. Honestly, Central Coast Mariners are the form team of the competition at the moment. And in Graham Arnold, they have... I'm going to go to limb. They've got a... For A-League standards, they have a master tactician. He's shown from day one that he knows what he's doing. He's not afraid to change things up if things don't work. And I can guarantee you that he has spent many, many sleepless nights working on how to beat every team individually. And look, the results... I can say the results speak for themselves, even though they haven't won championships. He is, you know, he's more successful in a win-loss ratio than Ange Postecoglou. And the team plays good football. And Matty Simon, they have a very skillful forward who is often mistaken for just being a brute. And Bernie Abini and Mustafa Mini, two amazing youngsters coming through. They have a solid side with a smart coach, and they are going to be Brisbane's biggest threat. And they should go into this weekend as favourites, and rightly so.
Look, I'm not the first person to go on air and say this, but I loved it, the Abini combination. They were great to watch last week.
They were great, and you know they showed during the final series last season that they're the future of possibly not the Mariners, because they will be one of the bigger things, but they are going to be the future of Australian football.
We'll see those two playing together in a gold shirt for sure.
Absolutely. And I mean, any player who looks so similar to Mario Balotelli as a Benny has to be a good thing, surely.
That's right. I just want him to like ditch goal celebrations, and when he scores one with his shoulder, that'll be complete. Also, when he flattens his backyard to build a go-kart track, that's when you know you've got a good one. Did you see, you're a Man City fan, of course, mate. Did you see that Enoch Balotelli has signed for Stoke, Mario's younger brother?
I did see that, actually.
Yeah. It's off topic for us, but I just thought, since I haven't spoken to you in a little while. Last game of the round was Gold Coast United 0, Sydney 0. That's all it probably needs to be said about that one, to be honest.
Well, there's only so much you can say about a 0-0 draw. Gold Coast United, for a young side, they're going typically like a young side. Sydney will be a disappointing result. They have been firing lately, especially the Nicky Carr in the middle just directing things, and Bruno Cazarin showing himself as a reasonably good forward. So I know a lot of people thought it was the worst game ever and Gold Coast United had some dreadful tactics, but I heard
I didn't think it was really as bad as people were saying. Yeah. I didn't think it was as bad as people were saying. I thought that people quite often... I've seen a hell of a lot of great 0-0 draws, and I've seen some boring 3-3 draws. I'm not saying this was a great 0-0 draw. It was a pretty poor game. It wasn't as bad as people said, though, because, one of the good thing about it was, there was the rain. There was the tensions growing in the game. So there was little battles in there. It was never far off kicking off in that game, I felt.
I think it's a bit of a perceptions too thing. People like picking on Gold Coast, and they'll use any excuse to sort of put them down. Rightly or wrongly so, they do get a lot of flack. And so would they actually do something good? I mean, they played well against Sydney to claim a point. So that was
interesting that you say that. Actually, I had a discussion with, of course, fellow football sacker Pete Novakovsky last weekend after that match, and he sort of was having a go at Gold Coast, saying, "Oh, they're boring every week, and stop going out to not get beaten and try and win the game." And I said, "Well, hang on, Sydney did the same thing." And he said, "No, they went to an away game determined not to lose, and they got that result." And I said, "Well, hang on, why is it professional when Sydney FC do it, but it's boring when Gold Coast United do it? You look at Gold Coast United, they're bottom of the league, their confidence is an all-time low, and they're a team full of kids from the youth team. Surely their prerogative has got to be go out, keep yourself in the game, and try and nick results at this stage. They're not trying to play people off the park and leaving themselves open to cop a battering."
Well, that's right. Look, just for the sake, the way they played against Sydney is the way Wellington played against Brisbane, yet everyone's singing the praises of Wellington, and everyone's putting Gold Coast down, so go figure.
Yeah. All right, let's have a look ahead to this week's games. No doubting the match of the round, the Raw against the Mariners. What are your predictions? Does it all hinge on the Thomas Broich factor, and will that mean that the Mariners will probably get home?
Well, I don't think it does hinge on the Thomas Broich factor. It's a bit of a strange situation where in past meetings the Raw have been able to just play their usual style. The Mariners have had to adjust every game to try to find something which works. But this game, Mariners are the form team. They can come in to play how they usually do, which is effective against the Raw. And one would think that the Raw are going to change little bits, not a lot, not fundamentally, but little things here and there to try and make sure there's space behind the line, space for them to play in. And, there's situations where they can create goal-scoring opportunities. So it's going to be interesting to see what Ange comes up with to battle the tactical heavyweight that the Mariners are this season.
Exactly.
Everything is honestly, strangely enough, pointing to a Mariners win. And this is where the Raw have been copping flack, three losses in a row. This is where they can come and make a statement, say, without Broich, without Henrique, without Matt Smith, without James Meyer, we can still beat the second-best team in the league, or at least get a draw. If they can get a point from this match, they're back on the boat, and they'll sail towards the end of the season, happy as Larry. If the Mariners can get a win here, not much changes. People keep flacking the Raw, saying they're past it, they're over it, it's a hangover. People keep saying the Mariners are good, and Mariners will go on, and they'll give a real challenge to claim the premiership. But it's going to be an interesting match. I wouldn't say it's going to be a key match, and especially it's not going to outline the importance of Broich being in the side or not, but I can't wait for the game and to see what it brings us. It's just going to be a good game of football.
Yeah, make sure you see it. That's obviously the match of the round. Adelaide Gold Coast United, interesting battle there. Rennie Coolen still under pressure. Gold Coast United obviously still under pressure. First, before we move on to that one, I should get your prediction for Raw Mariners. What are you saying?
Raw Mariners, honestly, I'm saying a 2-0 away win to the Mariners.
Ooh, tell you what, he's put his foot down there. I'm going to say 2-1 to the Mariners. I fancy them to nick it as well. Adelaide Gold Coast United, I fancy Gold Coast United to nick this one away from home as well. What are your thoughts?
Oh, honestly, I feel the same. Adelaide United, in Coach Rennie Coolen, is the bipolar opposite of Graham Arnold. He has one plan when it comes to tactics, and he cannot change it. He has never had any plan Bs. He has no, at both those press conferences, he has no answers to why things don't go right. And without star players like Leck and Flores, they can't win games. They are, to me, he is the ultimate disappointment when it comes to the coaches in the A-League. Some coaches in the past, like Ernie Merrick, Laurie McKinnon, we knew what to expect with them. Rennie Coolen comes in with high hopes. They brought in a foreigner with qualifications, and he serves it rubbish. And it was very disheartening. But Gold Coast, they have a great record against Adelaide United away from home, strangely enough. Of course, last time they played in Adelaide, it was actually a Gold Coast home game, and they lost, so that doesn't count. But, look, I think Gold Coast can go there. They'll get a 1-0 win or a nil all draw again. And, you know, all it takes is Gold Coast to get 3 points, and they'll be back up with the mid-table pack. Saying that, I don't think they'll stay there very long, but, you know, I have a feeling they're going to go better than people say in this game.
So, just a recap from that one, Christian is a big fan of Rennie Coolen. Newcastle against Sydney FC, this one has the potential to be a very good game as well, doesn't it?
Well, yeah, we say the Roar versus Mariners is the game of the round, and that's probably because of the hype surrounding the Roar's losing streak and the Mariners' winning streak, but when it comes to just total interest to see, this could be a season-defining game for both teams. You know, Newcastle Jets have been great at home, dreadful away, and they're against Sydney FC, who are playing really the best football they've played in a couple of seasons. Now, Sydney, after a win against the Brisbane Roar, a disappointing draw against Gold Coast, really have to come here and make a statement and say, we're going to win against the best-performing home team in the league. And Nicky Carr is going to have to stand up and be counted, which he has been doing in previous games. So this is the intriguing match of the round, and I can't pick it.
It's amazing, though. I'm, you know, expect a big crowd. Expect more people at this game than at the Roar Central Coast Mariners one, for me.
Mm. Oh, no, absolutely. They've got the memberships coming. Every home game, the Jets have done well, and they're just getting more and more. I think they got a record crowd last time they were out for a regular season game.
Play the victory, but, yeah.
Off the field, the Newcastle Jets are the big winners. Yeah. And Brisbane Roar on the field are the big winners, but you can only get 19,000 to a record-breaking game for them at Suncorp. As much as I tried to defend it and say it was raining and that, you know, the club's still trying to build things, if that happened down in Melbourne, if Melbourne had the Brisbane Roar as their team, they'd be selling Etihad Stadium out every week.
Yeah, so, you wouldn't get a ticket.
Yeah, that's right. Now, yeah, look, on the field, Jets are going to be good, and that crowd is going to act as a 12th man for them. So, look, you know, in a way, I want to see them keep doing well at home, because, you know, the stronger the Jets are off the field, the stronger the league is, let's be honest.
Yeah. It is great just to see two regional teams in the Jets and the Mariners doing so well community-wise and now on the field. Perth-Melbourne Heart. Interesting one, this, because no one gave the Heart a sniff in Brisbane. Perth went all the way to Wellington to not get anything. I think this could potentially be another Heart win.
I think so. It's strange. At the start of the season, the Heart was sort of dismissed, and I'll put my hand up and say I wasn't very impressed by their coach, John Vanship, for his first season, his first few weeks. But tell you what, they're going out of their business very quietly, but effectively. I think they've snuck up to third now, and I don't think anyone saw that coming, not least the Heart players themselves. So, look, if they can get another win here, which I'm confident they can do, it's up and away for the Heart. So,
no one saw it coming except for me, of course, who did tip them to make a finals appearance. I'll just throw that out there.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just waiting on David Williams to play well enough to receive a call-up to the Socceroos.
Well, he has to make the bench first. He's struggling to make the youth league squad at the moment.
It's a real shame that he's not sort of taken some of his previous form into this season, because this game against Saudi Arabia coming up in Melbourne, that could have been his ticket, actually.
That's right. And you know what it is? It's that whole Samson thing. He cut his hair and he's not powerful anymore.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, exactly. I couldn't agree more. Summed it up. Final game of the round. Melbourne Victory, Wellington Phoenix. Thoughts?
Yeah, look, honestly, Victory. Phoenix will probably try to play like they did against Brisbane, but I think they'll probably be more tempted to attack because Victory could be considered a weaker team. And in doing so, they'll open themselves up and Victory will score a couple of goals. Victory need to win. It'll be in front of a good crowd at Amy, I think it is. So, you know, the crowd's closer. The atmosphere is going to be better. Victory should win. Will they? Actually, no, probably not. Probably going to be another draw.
Yeah. I'm going to go for a victory win, but I expect to be wrong. So that is this weekend Cummings football wrapped up. To move on with the show now, we've sort of got a little bit of time left here, and we're going to talk about something. Christian and I often see eye to eye. In fact, too often. We're very often on the same wavelengths. We don't get enough sort of controversy on this show to drive it. However, there is one item that we've always seen differently. Now, I will bow to your superior coaching and tactical knowledge. You've got all the back, and you've won the trophies to back that up. and I respect your view on many things. However, when there's a corner, you and I look at it very differently from a defensive point of view, don't we?
We do, we do. I'm a big believer in the zonal system, defending system for corners, while you are the odd man marking and players on the post system.
That's right. I, as an old striker back in the day, always thought that... For me, there's two parts to scoring from a corner. You have to, A, lose your man and win the header. But that's only half the battle. You then have to direct that ball with your forehead into the goal. And I always just found it was harder to do that if there was a goalkeeper and two other blokes standing on the line. You're not of that opinion. You would rather just have a keeper on the line and have plenty of open space there, but commit men to win the headers. Talk us through your opinion.
Okay, well, basically, I think a lot of people don't understand exactly what the zonal system entails, so I'll do a quick summary of that. Basically, there's two zones where almost every single goal from a corner is scored. One is on the edge of the six-yard box from the near post and on the penalty spot. Almost all goals from corners are scored in those two positions. So what you do is you load up your two best headers on each of those positions and you put one at the front of the six-yard box to stop the short, low corner, and you stick one on top of the D. Now, the rest of the players do not go close in the six-yard box, and they are around those key areas just in case there's any dribbles or drops. Now, what happens is that way, you say the first part is to win the header. The player positions like this, it is very hard to get a clean header, so that first part is very difficult. Now, the second part of it is that once the ball is cleared, because you're already on the six-yard line, all it takes is a quick burst of, you know, half a second for all defenders, this is the most important part of it, to sprint up after the ball's been cleared and suddenly all the attack is offside. When you have the two players on the post, this actually makes this impossible, and that's why when you play the man-marking system, and by a lot, I mean almost most of the goals, apart from the ones which obviously are done by two key areas, are scored in the second phase from the corner because players are allowed to still hang around that six-yard area because the two players in the post are keeping them onside. Now, basically, yes, there is the threat that once if they do get a clean header, there is the chance that it can go in on goal. And of course it takes an attacker to beat one or two defenders to be able to do that. But in a way, that's similar to the man-marking system where you have to beat the player to have the ball in anyway.
And well, that's my argument. I mean, we're both putting in systems in place where the onus is on the attacker to lose the defender and win the header. But in your situation, it's 33% easier to score. It's 33%, sorry, 66% easier to score once you've won that header than it is in mine.
Yeah, possibly. That sounds good in theory, but if you actually have a look at the numbers and the figures, you have a look on the average team, if you have two players put on the post for each corner, on average they will clear two goals off the line a season. You put those exact same players on the six-yard box, on average they'll clear 100 balls per season. I mean, I'm not sure how you can argue, any rational man can argue with that, apart from the fact that you used the tradition of putting it past the post.
Are these statistics, though, are they one player, or are they just balls cleared off the six-yard box and balls cleared off the line per season?
I say two balls cleared off the line per season, so that's four for the team, because one person on each post. And the player on the six-yard line clearing 100, that's just for the one player.
Okay.
But obviously, not every player on the six-yard box is going to be clearing 100 corners per season, because that player on the six-yard box is in that key position, stopping the header coming through. The one big thing which people will point out and say, okay, so you've got those two positions, well, why don't you put someone really wide at the far post, do a long corner at the top for him to put it back in? Those long, high corners allow the time and the space for the defence to shift, and by the time they shift, then, you know, and that. It's basically the same situation. There's someone in that key position where the ball's going to land, because the longer the hang time, the more time the defenders have to move to those positions.
Excellent. We want to know what your thoughts are out there in football land. So you can contact us, info@thefootballsack.com in email form, which, let's be honest, you're probably going to struggle to fit your views on zonal marking into 150 characters on Twitter. So info@thefootballsack.com. Or if you are extremely astute with your words and succinct, you can get us on Twitter @thefootballsack. Or alternatively, if you are a member of the Facebook community, you can find our page on Facebook and post on the wall. Be very, very interested to hear what the general consensus is and find a percentage.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. To be honest, I think it's a bit of a situation where, like, when Australia first tried to introduce the zonal marking system for the back four, there was a lot of resistance to that because people just simply weren't used to it and they liked the old man marking stopper sweeper system. But now, no top line team in Australia or around the world for that fact do play the stopper sweeper system. It's a period of change which people have to get used to, and they have to stop blaming the system when it goes wrong. And they have to start crediting the system when it goes right. It's those two things which don't happen. You know, when every goal is saved from the zonal system in corners, they don't go good work system. They say good header player. But for every goal which is conceded by the system, they don't say that player should have headed the ball. They say that's the system's fault. So it's just because it's simple. People are afraid of change, and this is a big change because this has only come out in Australia and England very recently. So in saying that, you know, that's the beauty of football. Everyone has their own opinions. Everyone has their own systems and tactics. But as a coach, when I see a team lining up against my team in a corner and they're in a man-marking situation, I rub my hands of glee because I know I've got a much better chance of scoring than if they are doing proper zonal marking.
Excellent. Well, that's about it for today. What we'll have to do is direct everyone to the website, thefootballsack.com. Plenty of great stuff there to check out, including a fantastic blog. Of course, we have plenty of blogs up there, but one in particular this week from Thea Slatcher. Run us through exactly what the gist of her blog this week is about. It's got something to do with urine, I believe.
Yes. Now, what happens is obviously people that you hear urine tests, and I think, you know, players getting drug tested, etc. But a less common known fact is that occasionally, reasonably often, the coaching staff will request a urine sample from a player after a match to check their hydration levels. Now, what that entails for the players is going to the bathroom, you know, urinating in a cup, walking through the recovery room where all the players are getting massaged, chilling to music, etc., all the way to the team doctor. So, you know, as you can imagine, all the players get a bit of stick when they're walking through through a crowded team room with a you know, a bowl of urine in their hand. But what Sarah Walsh decided to do one day in Matilda camp is she filled a what she did is she walked through the room, right, with the urine cup full of her urine, and she accidentally on purpose tripped over her own feet, had the lid askew and spilled it all over the captain at the time, Cheryl Salisbury's legs, who absolutely freaked out. Now, the girls, as bad as they felt for Cheryl, decided, like, it was too funny not to laugh. And then when Sarah Walsh decided to sit down, cross her legs in a very ladylike manner, she then proceeded to lift the lid off and drink the rest of it, absolutely freaking out with the rest of the team. Now, what I didn't mention that story was that that bottle of urine was actually yellow Gatorade, which Sarah Walsh did not let on until 3 days later when she told the rest of the team. Now, it's funny because I had a chat to Sarah Walsh this morning about that story, and she says, "It's not true, it's not true." I said, "Really?" She's like, "Yes, I definitely didn't cross my legs in a ladylike manner."
Oh, okay, great. I'm glad that story did turn out to be true.
So, yeah, no, look, honestly, Thea Slatcher's blogs are amazing. We had Claire Tulkinghorn doing blogs last season. We have Jodie Taylor, Melbourne Victory captain, and Thea Slatcher doing them this season. And working for Melbourne Victory, I should say that Jodie Taylor's are amazing, which they are, but let's be honest, Thea Slatcher's blogs are head and shoulders the most amazing player reads I've ever actually read.
They're very, very honest, aren't they?
Yeah, she's very honest. She'll call a spade a spade. She's very articulate with her wording, and she just has so many great football stories.
Yeah.
And it is my highlight. Apart from going to the game day every weekend, it's my highlight to receive her story in the email every week, and I'll read it and go up on the side. It's great. So check it out, because even if you're not a fan of the women's game, everyone's a fan of a good football yarn, and she's one of the best tellers of football yarn that I've met for a very long time.
Good stuff. thefootballsack.com, the place to go for all your urine related stories. Thanks very much for tuning in, listener, to the Friday show. We should also mention happy birthday to Tyson Scott, one of our contributors. He's celebrating his, I don't know how old he is, birthday. So happy birthday to you, Tyson. For Christian, thank you very much for joining me.
As always, it was an absolute pleasure, Jack.
And for me, thank you very much for joining me. And for the listeners, thank you very much for tuning in once again. We'll hopefully be back same time next week for you to tune in for another Friday show. Take care, everybody, and we'll see you then.